Welcome back to the Training Babble Podcast. I'm your host, Dave Schell, and today I am joined by Jeff Lukic. And I think I just butchered your last name. How do you say your last name, Jeff?
That's perfect. Lukic. That's exactly how you say it. Well done.
All right. So Jeff is a friend and a coach that I've been in contact with over the last several years. He's a triathlon coach, ultra running coach, and coaches cyclist as well. And today we're going to talk about kind of a disconnect between big goals and reality. And this came up in a conversation a couple of weeks ago where Jeff and I were talking just about some of our experiences with athletes signing up for these really big events, such as Leadville 100 or an Ironman triathlon or an ultra running race, but then really not grasping what that might entail to prepare for that type of event. Before we get into that, Jeff, tell us a little bit more about yourself for those people who may not be familiar with you.
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm happy to be here, Dave. And I know the topic today you and I've talked about a couple of times, so I'm glad that we're kind of having a formal discussion. I hope it will be helpful to others. Well, again, my name is Jeff Lukic. I'm a performance, endurance performance coach out of Georgia. I live just outside of Atlanta, a couple of hours outside of Atlanta. I'm a retired state government executive, but I've been coaching endurance athletes for maybe the past 12 years or so. And I do that mostly full time now. And as you said, I focus mainly at this point on long course racing and a lot of triathlon. Ironman's a popular distance, as you well know. But the past couple of years, I think ultra running has become more popular. So I'm picking up more of the ultra runners. And then I also kind of coach quite a few people that have unusual type events. So multiple day stage races, that sort of thing. So I love doing programming for unusual events, which I hope will become more popular because I think they're kind of cool.
They are. Yeah. I coach somebody who does some adventure racing, and it's been an interesting learning curve for me to find out what they're doing and how it all unfolds. So before we kind of get into identifying what the issue is we're seeing and kind of putting a name to it, you just mentioned something that kind of reminded me of something. You focus on longer endurance racing, and I would put myself in that same boat. And I think it's, I don't know if there's been a shift, but that definitely seems to be what's popular. And especially over the last 5 to 10 years and everybody gravitating towards these longer. And when we're saying longer, we're saying 5+ hour to complete endurance events. And so I think that might be part of what leads to that, to this issue that we've seen. But I just wanted to ask you, what do you think it is about these longer distances that is so attractive to athletes?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think in the sport of triathlon specifically, we could probably throw 70.3 distance in there, even though it's right at the cusp between five and a half, 6 hours for a lot of athletes. I think that it has become more popular, especially how it's the longer distance are socialized out there among endurance athletes. So, you know, back when I've been racing a long time, and I know you have as well. But back when we got started, I think the natural progression was, you know, let's show up at a shorter distance race and let's progress sort of organically from there and see how it goes. And then we're seeing a lot of athletes now, as you know, want to jump right in. Like, I want to do that big event, that, you know, that ultra distance run, you know, 50, 100 mile Leadville, you know, Ironman and that sort of thing. And sort of, for lack of a better word, kind of skip the natural progression and learning and discovery that comes from progressing, you know, the shorter distances. And so your question is, why are people doing that? I don't know if people think it's easier to take that path, or for some reason people want to hack, you know, sort of hack endurance sports and like just jump there. Or you know, maybe people just want to see what they can accomplish. And the longer distances seem to be the most popular, when in fact, you and I both know that it's not necessarily easier.
Absolutely. And you and I have talked about this before, where everything hurts. And I tell my athletes this constantly, like, everything hurts. It just hurts on different ways. Yeah. You know, like a 30 minute race can hurt a lot. A 12 hour race can hurt a lot. They just sting differently. And I think you just touched on something really important. So much of our culture these days is hacking, right? Yeah. Like finding shortcuts, whether we're hacking your health or hacking your fitness or hacking your time, you know, like life hacks. There certainly is this mentality of like, how do you get there sooner with less work?
Right.
But I don't think it applies to endurance sport very well.
No, it doesn't. And, you know, Dave, I failed to mention that I'm also a coached athlete. I've been coached for the last 12 years. And one of my previous coach came from a cycling background, and I raced in Belgium, like as a teenager, and just really came up in the 80s, mainly racing. One thing that he impressed on me was what I just mentioned, and that's the discovery process. So discovery is different than learning. Discovery really is learning in combination with kind of absorbing everything that this sport has to offer and really learning a lot about ourselves along the way. And when people want to get there quick, like, I'll have my speed now, please, like, here, you know, buy some wheels or, you know, whatever, you're really losing a lot of that discovery that you'll miss out on along the way. And you know, I think not everybody is that way. I mean, everybody has their reason, but I'm seeing, as you are, more and more of that. And getting there quick, even if you get there and meet your goal, you still may be disappointed. Like, and so I think that as I've heard you talk about on this podcast, is you really need to think about your why, you know, along the way. And I know we're going to touch more on that as we kind of get into the discussion.
Yeah. And so you just kind of mentioned this a little bit. What exactly, I mentioned it as we opened here, but why does it matter? Like, what is the issue that we're seeing, like, to put a name to it or to shine a light on it?
Yeah.
And like, I'll just speak for myself. I've had athletes that contact me and they're looking for a coach because they just signed up for some big event. And a lot of times it might be 12 weeks out and we start working together. I'm looking at their training peaks or whatever. And they've been training, you know, maybe riding their bikes 3 times a week, maybe 5 hours a week or something. And so one of my big goals is always to increase that. And a lot of times I think it's almost a shock to them because they didn't either expect to or don't want to ride their bike that much.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a disconnect there between what it requires to attain these goals and what they're willing to do.
Yeah.
From your side, what do you see?
Well, I see it the same way, and it happens more often. Like, as you say, people pick big goals and then they have like their current understanding of what it takes to get there. And often through, you know, no fault of their own, other than like the lack of research and the kind of things that I know we're going to talk about athletes should do, that gap is so wide that, to me, it ends up creating disappointment very quick when they're not able, or they feel like they're not able to do what a coach prescribes, for example, or do for a self-coached athlete, do what they really need to do in order to meet that goal in that big event safely and finish with a smile on their face. Like, you don't want, you and I both, we don't want athletes finishing and suffering so much. Because at the end of the day, for me, part of my mission is to keep athletes in the sport and keep them safe and healthy for as long as I can. If they pick a big goal, like a huge 100-mile mountain bike race or an ultra race or even an Ironman, and they end up burning themselves out because they constantly feel like they can't do enough to get there, or they're not willing to put in the work to get there, they're just going to get burnt out and be frustrated. And then they'll leave the sport. And I know you don't want people to leave the sport. I don't want people to leave the sport. And even as important, we want people giving back to the sport later on. You and I were both athletes before we became performance coaches. So we want more coaches in the industry as well. So to me, it always ties back about, we really need to get real about what we're saying we want to do. Do we like the idea of it, or do we like what the actual process will be. And that is the day-to-day grind that can often be boring, you know, in order to accomplish weekly, monthly, you know, maybe even a longer block of training. And I'm going to be honest with you, sometimes these goals, like Kona, qualifying for Kona, for example, for an age group athlete can be a multiple year process. And I worry that people are losing the patience, you know, as we talked about earlier, in order to put that work in.
Right. Yeah. So, and I just have to, I don't know if you watch The Office, but I'm just thinking about one of the episodes where Michael's talking about adopting a baby and Pam tells him, well, it can take up to 9 months. And he's like, well, I don't even know if I want a baby then.
Like, yeah, right.
I don't know if I'll want a baby then. And it's like, yeah, but it's kind of one of those things, right? Where it's like, we see these things, they're shiny and we're like, oh, we want that, but will you still want it 6 months down the road?
Yeah,
you
know, right.
Put that in. So now that we've identified kind of what we're seeing, before people sign up for events, what are some steps, like from your perspective, that they should take before they actually pull the trigger and commit to this attractive, huge event?
Yeah, a lot of people that I end up coaching and even just speaking with, kind of doing consults with, you know, you have people who will sign up for the big event and then, you know, that's in front of them. So it kind of forces them to perhaps get the wheels in motion, so to speak. I really recommend that people do some research ahead of time. So, it, you know, if you've got a huge goal to do a 5+ hour event on a mountain bike, or an ultra run or whatever we're talking about here, figure out a way to really begin the process of understanding what you're getting yourself into, you know. And I have a couple of recommendations. Some people think that that may be too much, but just for, like, you know, we have the internet, like, begin there, really begin to research what it means, to be on your bike that long, or to run, you know, nonstop for 5+ hours or more. And then talk with your peers. Like, you know, if you're wanting to do this, you probably already have friends who are endurance athletes. Like, really, I think just talking with somebody who's already maybe covered that distance would be a great place to start. People like you and I are out there to help, and you can certainly do consultations with a coach. Some coaches do them, you know, at no cost. Some people may charge a nominal fee. And then I mentioned this to you this week in an email, but volunteering at an event is an enormous, like, that's so huge. Like, if you're there on the course and you see and you, you know, hear and you experience that event, it really, really prepares you. Plus, you're giving back to the sport, which we all want. I think that can prepare you. But that, all of everything I mentioned takes time. And the last thing I'll mention is, you know, before you jump into something like this, talk with your family about it. You know, 10 years ago, I might not have recommended that, but over and over, I'm seeing athletes get in deep into the training process, and then things at home begin to kind of, you know, maybe some tension, and or maybe even your employer. But as I told you, endurance sport is a team sport. So you need to make sure your family embraces your goal, maybe almost as much as you do. It's very helpful.
And that's such a good point. Like, first, I want to touch on that, is that that's something I started asking athletes, I don't know, gosh, probably when I first started coaching, but when somebody has a really big goal like that, I always ask, are you married? Do you have a family? How did your wife feel about this? Because if you don't have the support of your, like, it's never going to work. It's the same thing as if you're trying to be on a diet and you're trying to eat healthy, but then your partner's you're still buying all the crap and everything and not being supportive. Like, you're going to have a really hard time with it. And so, but yeah, if your partner's not on board, then you're going to have a hard time getting workouts in. You're going to feel guilty. And so it's important to have those conversations and talk about what it might entail, the time commitment, and then also work it out, work out some sort of schedule where maybe you're trading off. If you have young kids, you watch the kids while I'm off on a 5-hour ride, and then I'll come back and you can go work out, or you can go do something fun. But definitely having those conversations is huge. The other thing you mentioned is volunteering at an event. And I think there's so much value in seeing people towards the end where they're just out of their mind,
yep.
covered in salt, like not thinking clearly, you know, it's like just to really drive home what it entails to do something like that. So great points there.
Well, and you know, before we leave that topic, you know, these race directors work awfully hard. And I think that they need our support as much as anyone, you know, especially coming off of the pandemic. So the racing industry on that side depends on volunteers, you know, and I do think we have an obligation to give back. And that's just sort of something that I like to talk about. But anyway, but the learning and discovery, as you point out, I raced a 50K ultra in November, and it was a 10 5K loops. Can you imagine that? It was in a city. So my wife was there and like videotaped me, you know, every 25 minutes or whatever I was coming around, and progressively, you know, over those 10 loops, I began to look very different. So what you said reminded me of that, because I've watched little videos of my first loop versus my final loop when, you know, I was cramping or whatever. But it does give you a sense of reality that you would never get otherwise. And I think it's helpful. I think it's helpful in making a decision on whether or not you want to cover that distance yourself.
Yeah. And so you'd mentioned doing some of the research and perhaps talking to a coach, but also joining Facebook groups, things like that. I think some of the things you should look for, like just Googling, like how long should it take, or looking at the past year's results.
Yeah.
And getting a sense for, and typically I start, you know, I see how many people entered. And so if there's, let's say there's 300, I'm going to find 150 and find what is that median finishing time?
Yeah.
Like what is the average people doing? And then like, what is the last person doing? And then also I think one of the, and I don't know how much you deal with this with ultra running, I'm sure there's also cutoffs, but with the gravel races and especially with Leadville, like some of the big challenges for people are just meeting the cutoffs.
Yeah.
And so they enter some of these events and may not even be ready to meet that first cutoff. And so like really having those milestones, like I need to be able to cover this amount of distance in this amount of time before I commit to doing something like this.
Right. And for the self-coached athlete, that's really, really difficult because you're depending on what you're reading in one particular article on one forum or whatever. And we all know about the internet. Like you've got to be very careful with who you listen to and who you don't. It applies, you know, in the medical world, but it applies in the endurance world as well. But you mentioned cutoffs. So I think of Ironman when I think of cutoffs. There's nothing more in your face about an endurance race regarding cutoff as it is in Ironman. And like you, you know, we want to make sure the athlete can meet those milestones in training, and that's demonstrated. To me, it's about safety, keeping them safe and healthy, and making sure that that race is the reward, whether it's ultra or whatever, that's the reward we get for the work that we put in. We definitely don't want them to suffer for 12, 13, 15 hours because that doesn't make sense to train in a way where you're just suffering to the point where you almost don't finish. Like that's not a place anybody needs to be, you know, that's a world of hurt.
Right. Yeah. So now that we've kind of talked about what steps we should take before we commit to a big goal, let's say you've done the research, you've talked to a coach or you've talked to friends, you've talked to your training group, got all the information you could, and you've decided you're going to pull the trigger and you're going to commit to this big race, this big goal. What are some of the things, I guess this is where we serve our role in that process, there is letting people know what should they expect now that we've committed to this goal. What are we in for?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think the first thing that I talk with people about is avoiding outcome goals as much as they can, like especially for a first year athlete, you know. And so what I mean by that is, you know, steer away from the very first thing you're saying is like, I want to complete an Ironman in 13 hours. that's a great goal and we can get there. But I always try to get people to really think about the process goals, you know, and if you can do that first and put in the work and think about, you know, how I can approach the process in a positive way, the outcome goals will happen. You know, they right. really will. So back to my earlier point, if your goal is, I just want to finish by midnight, that's a great goal. I mean, I get that, but your margins are so small that you set yourself up for frustration and possibly even not making the cutoff, which is why I kind of draw a line there. But so I think understanding the process is really one of the very first steps. And then it's okay to really ask a coach or whoever you're consulting, like, just give me an idea about how many hours a week you think this will be. And then, you know, of course, you have to know how long, you know, how fast they might be on them. This is where speed is important. Like, you know, you want to, or pace, I should say, because a 5-hour run for somebody may not be the same. But it's okay to begin to dig into that because it does give you a glimpse of what your week may look like or your long training blocks. And so I think those are some of the first questions in understanding the process and then really looking at how much time am I really talking about. And then you can get into effort, like how much these workouts might hurt.
Right. So that is a question I actually had for you. And so I'm glad you just said that is, do you have in your head a kind of minimum number of hours that somebody needs to train? Like if somebody comes to you and they want to do their first Ironman, do you have a set number of hours where, okay, yeah, we can do it, but it's like, we need at least this many hours.
Yeah. It's to, as you can imagine, and this is true, not just an Ironman, Dave, as you well know, but it could be any long event and it depends on the athlete. So once I get the information from them through the athlete questionnaire, which is like the beginning of the process, all coaches do that, I can begin to get a sense of their athletic history, how much they've raced, and then what kind of paces are we talking about? So I ask questions like, tell me about your last long run you've done in the past 6 weeks. And then I begin to talk about or look at paces without even kind of getting them to talk more about. Once I get a sense of what kind of paces we're talking about, then, you know, I begin to give them some broad ranges. So if you, you know, I'll give you a perfect example. I've got a young man that I coach in his 20s, and he wanted to do Ironman Florida in the 10:30 range, 10 hours, 30 minutes, which, you know, is pretty fast. Like that's pretty solid Ironman for darn sure for anybody. But, you know, I began to talk with him, you know, okay, you're looking probably at meeting that kind of goal based on where you are now. Your fitness is, you know, maybe anywhere from 7-8 hours in the beginning and maybe capping off 7-18 hours, you know, a week, you know, as we get closer to the race. So as the, you know, I have a couple of areas for an Ironman athlete. I do this with mountain bikers and ultra runners, you know, 20 weeks out, we need to kind of be at a certain place, 15 weeks mm-hmm. out, you know, the alarms begin to go off a little more. 10 weeks out, it's like, okay, you know, we really need to make sure we're focusing on hitting these workouts with 90-95% consistency and that sort of thing. And I talk with them about what's expected. And when things begin not to happen, then I try to have those conversations, because if you don't have the difficult conversations, then I think it just sets everybody up for kind of disappointment. And because a coach wants their athletes to succeed, that's what we're in this business for.
Right. Yeah. And I think you just, you reminded me, like, that's, I've kind of got these benchmarks in my head as well. Right. Like you and I had talked about it a couple of weeks ago where, yeah, kind of 6 months is kind of where it starts. And we can be pretty flexible, but once we're within, you know, once we're within 4 months, it starts to get a little bit more rigid. And once we're within 3 and 2 months, there's so much more impact for any missed workout or any illness or things that might pop up. And so I think that's where a lot of this stemmed from, this conversation, is that, you know, if we're constantly missing workouts, whether it's because of a family commitment or something popped up, end of the day after work, you just weren't in the mood, things like that. It's like, we can be a bit flexible in the beginning.
Yeah.
But over time, like it really starts to matter. And like you said, the alarms start going off. And so you and I had talked about it a little bit about I hate the word compliance, so I don't want to use compliance, but let's talk about consistency.
Yeah.
And how important is consistency in this process versus having the one or two magic workouts every couple of weeks?
Yeah. Well, compliance is a word we talk about, like when coaches are in a room and we're kind of talking about the business, but I prefer not to use that word as well. I don't think it can be overstated how important consistency in what we do is in endurance sports. It's not the only thing, but definitely building that routine, building that habit of getting not just the work in, but the right work in at the right time and the right recovery at the right time is to meeting the goal. Consistency is the challenge that I face the most with athletes, the age group athlete, and I can understand why. I mean, we coach people who manage difficult careers, they have families, they have young children. For the coached athlete out there, you know, just trust your coach is building in some, as you meant, used the word padding earlier before, but we're building in an understanding into the programming that your kids are going to get sick, which means you're going to get sick, maybe, you know, especially if you have young children. Things are going to go over at work. You're going to have issues at home, you know, that you have to take care of, plumbers, you know, whatever. We understand that. And that's why, you know, 15 weeks doesn't really mean 15 weeks. 15 Right. weeks means more like 13 weeks, you know? And so we have to listen to each other as you're building that partnership between us as a coach and that athlete, and understand that when we say consistency and we harp on it, like, it's really, really important. And so over the past couple of months, as we've talked about kind of in advance of this podcast, putting some metrics to that, like, what does it really mean? And I think for these longer events, you know, when you're 15 weeks out, maybe even 20 weeks out, you know, you really need to be 90, 95% consistency week in, week out. Consistency doesn't mean hitting all your workouts for 2 or 3 weeks. Consistency means stringing together week after week after week of doing the right work at the right time as best as you can. So you're really talking about only missing what, 2 workouts a month, something like that.
Right.
And after that, things begin to kind of slowly decline in terms of, you know, keeping your FTP up or maybe even endurance and the things that are really important. And especially, you know, and we could talk about race specificity all day long, but that's really important too. So read those workouts, like what your coach gives you, like really look at the description.
Right. And so now we can get into this a little bit. And I think this is something you and I were talking about is there's some of these things that are almost a dirty word, right?
Yeah.
When we talk about what it's going to require. And so some of those things are like discipline and sacrifice, which almost may have a negative connotation to it, but it's true. And like the thing that I bring up all the time to athletes is there's only so many hours in a day. And so every time you say yes to one thing, you have to say no to something else. And so what I don't want athletes doing is sacrificing sleep so they can sneak in a workout or something like that. And so you're going to have to, you know, you might have to turn down going to the movies with friends or be late to something, things like that. But at the same time, I think that there's ways around it. If you're proactive, if you are reading those workouts ahead of time and know what they require, if you're thinking ahead of time, you can find out ways to get them in. And so let's just talk about the first one here, which is just discipline. So what does discipline mean in the context of training for this big event?
Yeah, that's a great question. I do think discipline is required. And you know, of course, we all like to say we're disciplined and I'm not. I mean, like I need to be as well. But being disciplined, especially during the period that you're training for a specific event, you know, discipline means that quite simply, when the clock goes off at 5 a.m., you know, you're going to have sort of a duality of like, it's going to be some tension in your head. Do I want to stay in the bed or do I really want to go ahead and get up and get moving so I can, you know, get on the trainer or hit the pool on time or, and being able to overcome what may feel more comfortable for you at that time is really how I sort of see discipline in the sport, in endurance sport, like overcoming the comfort that we all really want to have, you know, perhaps staying home, not getting on the trainer, not going out for that 5-hour training ride. You know, the weather comes up a lot. Like, I'm telling you, people don't like to get wet. I don't understand it. Like, it's so interesting. It's like, it, you know, I raced Boston Marathon last year, and like, you're talking about such an unpredictable race. It could be snowing or raining, you know, or high wind. And you better believe I was doing a lot of long runs in the wet, cold. But discipline is really looking out the window and understanding that it will not be as bad as you think it is. And if, even if it is not a, a great training ride, or maybe if you're not feeling well, it's only, it's another big win for you. It's another brick in the wall that's required to move towards that goal. So discipline's really important, and it's hard. Like, you know, Dave, like, it's so hard to be able to stick to this.
Yeah. And one thing I will add to that is that with my athletes, a lot of time, super early in the season, I think it's less important to force yourself to do things. And yeah, what I see is there's kind of a, inverse, relationship between these two things, where early in the season, maybe you just took a few weeks off, and so your motivation is super high.
Yep.
Weather's not great. And so you're like, oh, I'm going to like force myself to do this and do all the trainer rides and stuff. But I'm always really conscious of people burning out. And yep. So early in the season, I'll say, like, you know, willpower or discipline is a finite resource, and we don't want to use it all up now. Right. So it's okay some days to like cut these things short or whatever. Because when we get within 3 months of your big race, that's when you need that. And so yep. If you like at that point, if you're talking yourself out of like going and riding in the wind or going and riding in the rain, things like that, that's where it's going to be more detrimental yep. to your performance.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. And then the other thing, I think, like, it's just human nature. We always want to choose the path of least resistance, but, and I think you just alluded to this, there's so much value in having these tough rides, you know, these miserable rides, whatever. And I always talk about it as, building your mental toolbox or character building rides. It's like, yeah, they may not be great. Like, maybe you didn't get a great workout, but you toughed it out and you were very uncomfortable for a long time. And who knows what the race day weather is going to be. And so it's important to have experience in all those different conditions so that when it happens, you can say, well, at least it's not as bad as this.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, especially with cycling, you know, if one of your first experiences of the season is racing, you know, on a technical course in the rain, and you have not done that in training, you know, you've really got a safety concern, you know, especially with descending a technical course and that sort of thing. But, you know, you're right. Early in the season, we need to relax. Now, I like to build a schedule in early season that encourages sort of lower volume, but I want people to begin to build a habit of hitting the workout. So, you know, for my triathletes, I'm not going to give you anything that you probably don't need at the time. So I'm a stickler with duration. Like, and so I would rather people early in the season hit the duration, but maybe not go as hard as they, you know, maybe they're not they're feeling off, because I want them to begin to build that habit. But again, this goes back to trusting your coach. Your coach is not going to give you, you know, more than you need early in the season, because people will begin the season very enthusiastic. And you're right. They can, you know, 3 months later, they're like, I can't do this anymore. Like, it's just too much. So it is a bit of holding people back, but anyway, race specificity, kind of back to that, is critical. You know, you don't want to create a novel stress for your body on race day, because your body will reject it. And that goes for fueling too. You know, you don't want to, yeah. You want to train your gut too.
And so I just want to go on a tangent here for a moment, because you just
love
said
tangents.
Something. Yeah. So, I think this goes back to why we're doing this podcast and what we originally talked about, is I think one of the big things we see is people's eyes are bigger than their stomachs.
Yep.
And so they sign up for something and they sign up with us, and they're excited to be working with a new coach. And they, you know, when we ask realistically, how many hours do you have to train each week? And I would say most athletes almost always overestimate it.
Yeah.
And so they might be really good at adhering to that for 3 weeks, 6 weeks, but eventually it starts to take a toll. And then all of a sudden, and I don't know about you, but like my big red flag is all of a sudden, like the workout, like the comments stop coming.
Yeah.
You know, for a few days in a row and stuff like that. And I'm like, get them on a call and they're just like, oh, I'm burned out. I'm like, it's too much with work and all these other things I have going on. And so I think just to go back to what we were originally talking about, I think that's the other important thing is to really have an appreciation for what you can do consistently, realistically.
Yeah.
And like we want to undershoot it. And what I say with my athletes is my goal is always to find a sustainable workload because we build consistency by keeping you happy and healthy and motivated. And so if we can find that sustainable workload and do that week in and week out, that's going to be more beneficial than doing like having a great week and then not doing anything for a week.
Absolutely.
And then doing another great week and then not doing anything.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And that includes days off, but you're 100% right. You know, in most of the, you know, I've been coaching a lot of my athletes for up to 5 years. I know them. I've seen them through job changes, retirements, having children, having babies, you know. And so I bring all that up because I think coaching to me is about partnership with your athletes. And so when we talk about partnering with an athlete, we have to talk about shared accountability as well. And shared accountability is being honest with each other. But on the other hand, well, not really even the other hand, but an athlete doesn't want to disappoint their coach. So when the coach says, how many hours do you have to train? In their mind, they're thinking, oh crap. Like he or she wants me to commit to 12, 15 hours right now. So they'll go, I can do 12 hours. And then we discover that that's not possible. So it's really the responsibility, I think, of the coach in that situation to dig really deep into even in the programming. Maybe they'll tell us they've got 10 hours a week, but we see what's coming in on the post-workout comments. You know, I coach a lot of consultants, people, teachers, you know, in the medical field, and I kind of understand their jobs and I know they can't do it. So we can kind of intuitively adjust their weeks as best we can. But the workouts that are there, they really need to try to be consistent with that. And you know, we're not trying to be hard asses or anything. We really want them to be successful because after all, our job is to really help them see a light within themselves they can't see. And,
right.
You know, nothing is more important in a coach's job than helping them do that. So and we need to understand our coaches want what's best for us, but that means getting the work in. And that's so hard. You know, that's really a hard thing for us to talk with athletes about.
Yeah. And I do think there's part of this too, where, I mean, it's all over in the media, right? Like we were talking about life hacks and stuff like that and being able to do more with less. This secret workout is going to improve everything for you and everything. Right. And it's like, so I think it's also important. And I think you mentioned this in the beginning about loving the process. And so I think that's a big deal is if you don't genuinely enjoy running or riding your bike or swimming or whatever you're training for,
yeah,
then a big event probably isn't the right choice either.
It may not be. And you know, the process I could go all day on, and I know you could too. And then this notion about like truly understanding, as you mentioned earlier, there will be sacrifice and it's okay. Like you can be a great mom or a great dad and a great employee, great brother, whatever, and still train for these long distance events. If you approach it in the right way, you know, for sure. But, you know, I have a 30-year career in child welfare and leading one of the largest child welfare jurisdictions in the nation, which is Georgia. And I talked about process all the time. And I would say the same thing in business as I would in endurance sports. Like you have to really understand and be in love with the process. And I always use that word, be in love with it. People are like, what are you talking about? Like, how, you know, you really have to love the process of the day-to-day actions that action steps that have to, you know, to be taken. You have to love that process more than you love the outcome. So everybody wants to hear you're an Ironman. Like who doesn't want to hear that? I certainly did. And I raced Ironman for 10 years straight. But if you love that more than you love the process of getting there, then you're probably going to be disappointed along the way. And you and I've talked about this. The nitty gritty day in, day out is hard. It's boring. It can be tedious. We do all we can as endurance performance coaches to make it interesting. But at the end of the day, a lot of this long stuff is just long stuff.
Right.
Zone yeah. two, you know, really can be boring and tedious, but you have to understand how every workout impacts the next workout. Every missed workout impacts the next workout. And just talk with your coach, if you're a coached athlete, about what that process really will look like. And the more you understand something, the more you can manage it. And again, I have to say, you've got to really like that process of getting there. And that event, whether it's Leadville or an ultra or an Ironman, is really the gift that we get for going yeah. through that process. And so if you just want to be there, like, you know, you're going to really be disappointed and you're going to be in a lot of hurt, you know? But anyway, that's what I would say about process.
So, and you just brought this up too. So our other dirty word here is sacrifice, which I think has negative connotations, but it is, I mean, you and I talked about it. It's a very real thing. And I just want to preface this by saying, it doesn't mean all season, right? And there's a reason yeah. we have an off season and downtime and stuff like that. And so I think it's really important to look at the entire year and know that there are going to be times when you have to sacrifice, but there's also going to be times where you can go spend time with your family and your friends and things like that. And so it just really comes down to how important are these things to you and what yeah. you're willing to do for them. And one of the conversations I have with almost every athlete I coach is, what are you willing to sacrifice for your goal?
Yep.
And I tell them, nobody can answer that for you. It's like everybody has their line. And an example I use is I coached an athlete and I asked him at one point, because he hated riding the trainer. And I said, what if I could guarantee you you'd win a national championship if you just rode the trainer 3 days a week? It's like, nope, not worth it.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, now we know what your line is, what you're willing to do, you know? And so anyway, it's like, if these things are important to you, there's going to be some trade-offs. And so what does sacrifice look like in an athlete's life from your perspective?
Yeah. Well, the first thing I would say is I tell all of my athletes that family comes first. It just does. And work needs to be there as well. We need to understand that. Having said that, you will, if you're training for, you know, if you're training for 20 to 30 weeks, you know, for a long distance event, assuming you come with a certain level of fitness, to understand there will be sacrifices. Now, when an athlete thinks about sacrifices, I think the first thing that comes to mind is I'm missing my kids' soccer games, or I'm missing important events, children, that's important. But I would argue that if you really do a great job at planning your week, you can get, if not all of your workouts, most of your workouts in without even impacting your family, or minimal. But there will be sacrifices. And I think that going back to what we talked about earlier is having these conversations early on with your family, even if you've got teenage kids, like pull them into the conversation. This is why it's important. Talk with your wife or your husband and get them on board, and then begin to make deposits. Like, well, any good husband or good wife or good, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever, significant other, it's always good to be able to make these deposits. So when you make a withdrawal, it doesn't hurt so much, right? We know that. It's so important in endurance sports to do that. And maybe even explaining, you know, early on that, hey, you know, for example, Dave, for 10 years, on Sundays, my family, you know, I was gone. Like, that was my long day, you know, and I would be gone 6, 7, 8 hours, you know, and then come back totally cooked and like laid on the couch all day, you know.
Right.
But I had to make sure during the week that I really made deposits, not just with my wife, but my kids too, who are all adults now, as best as I can. And then also explaining to your significant other and your family and even your employer, like what you're doing and why it's important, and get them on board. We haven't talked much about this, but I'm a big advocate for talking to your employer about what you're doing. Not only will they be inspired, I have found they will be inspired, but the odds are they'll be incredibly supportive of you and maybe even help you with some flexibility in your schedule. But there will be sacrifices, and you need to be okay with that. Like it's okay. It's really part of it. Like what goal, like what big dream? There's no big dream out there that you can really have without some sort of sacrifice.
Right. And if there is, it's probably not worth it. It's probably not that great.
You know, it is a dirty word though. I think people don't like to hear it, and I get it, but I do think if you're, you have to be, like I wrote an article on a similar subject years ago, and it was like what doers do, and this was mainly, in business leadership, but what doers do is they're master planners. Like they really, they really are able to plan their week in a way where they can get things in that other people aren't able to get in. And, quite frankly, some people can just make things happen. Like, and you have to kind of be in a habit of trying to figure that out.
Yeah. And I want to add on to that. Because I do think that's one of the most important things is, you and I, when we first started talking, you'd shared kind of a list of the qualities you look for in an athlete when an athlete is looking to work with you. And so I kind of took what you had and thought about the athletes that I want to work with and stuff like that. And one of the things I have is just get shit done.
Yeah.
Like, finds a way. And it goes back to you talking about reading the workouts ahead of time or, the bad weather, stuff like that. And yeah, I think that's one of the big things I've seen with successful athletes is the ones that just find a way to get it done somehow, whether that means getting up earlier in the morning or creating weights out of buckets and pets and stuff like that, or just regardless of the weather, they're just getting outside and getting it in. They seem to have the most success. And I think that is definitely something to be honed and sharpened over time, is just rather than, I hate to say victim, but it is kind of like this victim mentality where it's like, oh, it's raining now, I don't know what to do. Like, how do I do my workout today? It's like, just figure it out. Because with these long events, I tell all athletes, it's a really long day and there's so much opportunity for shit to go wrong.
Yeah,
that it's important to experience that and to have to overcome adversity in training.
Yeah.
And so the more you do that,
it's about problem. It's really about problem solving. Like, you take a 100-mile mountain bike event or an Ironman or whatever, it's really about your ability to make decisions along the way and to problem solve. But I'd be curious, like when you have kind of casually shared with your athletes, Dave, what you just mentioned, that, among the characteristics of a successful athlete are just people who get shit done. Like what kind of response are you getting when you talk with people about that?
Yeah, it's probably not one that I've talked about enough.
Yeah. It's a hard conversation. It really is.
It is. Yeah. But it's like, it's definitely something that should be done more, I think.
Yeah.
Because I guess this goes back to something we were talking about too. And this is something I talk to athletes about. I think a lot of newer athletes might have this image in their head that once they're fit, the race isn't going to hurt, that they're going to cross the line. Everything's going to feel great. There wasn't any hardship or dark times along the road or whatever. And they like just cross the line feeling good. And I tell people, like, it's always going to hurt. You just go faster doing it. Right. And it's like, I think once people kind of embrace that a little bit, is that's where they're going to get those breakthroughs. And so again, it's like overcoming adversity. I think is the more you can be exposed to it and deal with it and overcome it, the better prepared you're going to be for these long events.
And I never, like when you first mentioned people getting things done, and I never ever want to have a conversation, you know, or be harsh around that, because I often talk with my own coach about, you know, since I kind of retired my main career and I have like so much flexibility now, I never want to lose sight of what it was like to work a 50, 55 hour week. And in my case, traveling around the state of Georgia, which is a large state, swimming in a different pool every week, you know, just trying to figure out how to make it happen. I somehow managed to race Ironman a long time under some pretty brutal work conditions. And I don't, honestly, I don't know how I got it done, but I can say there were certain habits I tried to build to make sure that, you know, I was as consistent. And it's simple things. And I'm talking like go to bed early, make sure you get a good night's sleep. You and I are both big advocates of getting these workouts, as many as you can, out of the way in the morning. This will help with the situation around sacrificing your family as well. I mentioned this to you on another call, but I heard a coach talk about this years ago, but I always tried to train as invisible as I could. That means getting on the trainer at 6 o'clock in the morning before your kids wake up or before that first conference call. And it is hard. It takes discipline to get out of bed at 5 o'clock to get in some breakfast, you know, and do what you need to do before that trainer ride. But I promise you this, if you try to do an FTP test at the end of a hard day of work, like it's not going to be the same as you do if you try to get it out of the way before the day begins. So there are habits that we can form to be able to set ourselves up to get stuff done, like to just make sure it happens. Like your coach can't change the weather. You know, your coach can't poke you on the shoulder and get you out of bed. I suppose we could. I mean, I'll be happy to call my athletes to get them out of bed, but only us as athletes really have the capability to kind of to center our own motivation and to foster that motivation and curiosity around why we want to do this in order to get us out of bed and to do those hard things.
Well, and I think you just touched on such a important other aspect here is intrinsic versus extrinsic motivation. Yeah. And that's the other quality I see of successful athletes are the athletes that are intrinsically motivated, that can train by themselves, that can enjoy the process, stuff like that. Like they're typically the ones that have more success than the ones that, and I actually just saw a quote the other day that was work in silence, let success be your noise. And I think that's such a great quote for these days of Instagram and Strava, where a lot of times it's like, oh, if it's not on Strava, it didn't happen. Right. And if people aren't giving you kudos, but it's like, it's the person who's doing hill repeats in, you know, with no one around and nobody knows about it. Like they're the ones that are.
Do it in the dark. Like if you want the light shine on it, let the light shine on race day. But otherwise, I think you're right. And everybody's motivated by a different thing. I coach a runner, and I got into motivation with her, like, what's really motivating you? And she shared with me that she just wants her husband to be proud of her. And I was like, wow, how powerful is that? And I don't know that she ever said it out loud to anybody before, but that's something we can work with. Like I did not expect this athlete to tell me that, but she did. And it made me realize that we all want somebody to be proud of us and to look at us and to see us do this. You know, let's face it, Dave, like endurance athletes and ego, like they go hand in hand, like including me. But that's okay. Like ego isn't always the enemy. Ego can sometimes inspire us to do things that we might otherwise not be able to do. But at the end of the day, you know, in order to close this gap we keep talking about, you know, what the goal is, like what it takes to get there and what we're willing and able to do to get there, we've got to shorten that gap as much as we can. And we've got to be really, really honest with ourselves and there are times, you alluded to this, there are times when an athlete will pick a goal and it's just not the right time. I can tell you now, I've coached several athletes, and even recently, where, you know, when I look at the totality of their family life, their work life, the stress they're under, in some cases, maybe even injury or medical condition, and I look at the goal that they're picking, you know, there can come a time where we need to have an honest conversation about, is this the right time? And that's okay. I would rather have that conversation than to get 10 weeks out from a race and we realize that we can't get there safely, because we haven't talked about this, but there is another milestone that I have for athletes when I think they have not put in the amount of work necessary to have them safely cross that finish line. Sometimes I'll begin, and I send a lot of red flags up before this, obviously, but I have to have a conversation that, you know, I don't think I can support this as a coach, and let them know that we've got a hard decision to make. You know, do we want to defer this race to some other time? You know, I don't know if you've had that conversation with people.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that I've said that I, and this is semantics, but
yeah,
it's more about, I haven't said, oh, I can't support this, but it's more about having that conversation. Like, okay, this is where we're at.
Yeah.
I'm just going to let you know that it's probably going to suck. Like, you're not going to have a good time. Like, you just need to like have realistic expectations going into it. And it's like, if you're okay with that, then great. Let's go. It's great training. It's going to be a good experience from that standpoint. But you know, like, you constantly have to adjust expectations based on consistency, essentially.
Yep.
And those benchmarks.
Safety is a big deal to me. And then maybe that came out of, you know, 10, 12 years of long course triathlon. Like if you don't put the run work in, as you and I know, you can always walk. In cycling, you know, you can suffer maybe through 112 miles, but, you know, a swim is different. That, you know, you've got a safety factor there that's a little bit different. So I'll support my athlete, but there does come this time where I'm like, okay, this is not, as you point out, like, we've got to really talk about what the path looks like now, and have them truly understand that expectation.
Yeah. And so you mentioned performing a gap analysis. And so I just want you to expand on that a little bit.
Such a boring word. But
what do you mean? Is this the coach and the athlete doing it, or is it the athlete doing it?
Yeah, it can be both. Like for me, you know, gap analysis is something that's done in the business world all the time. And I think that for an athlete, you know, I would recommend doing this, especially for a long course athlete, you know, every 90 days or so, really, talk with your coach about, like, where are we at in terms of training? You know, what are the five key components that I really need to be doing right now, you know, on the bike or on the run? Like, what are five non-negotiables that will really get me to the goal that I've expressed as an athlete? You know, that goal I have put out, you know, I have put that out in the world that I want to do. And then do a gap analysis on those things. And for example, you know, if you're somehow, let's say you're a long course triathlete and you're not getting the swim workouts in the way you need to, and you've got a goal to, you know, to race, you know, your next Ironman and do a one hour, 10 minute swim, which is pretty brisk, you know, think that'd be part of your gap analysis. What's preventing me from getting this in? Because a swim I bring up because it can often be complicated, a drive to the pool, you've got admin time in the locker room, in and out, you've got the swim itself. You perhaps have to fight for a lane, that you might not get a lane, you might get kicked out of the pool. Like, and so it has a lot going on. So you think about, okay, a part of that gap analysis would be, maybe I can get a lane at 6 a.m. versus trying to do that after work. And then do that with all of those key components, and then come up with a plan to close that gap. And then check yourself every 90 days. Okay, 90 days ago, I said I was going to get my ass out of the bed at 5 a.m. and hit the pool at 6 instead of 5 p.m. when everybody wants to swim at 5 p.m. You know, have I held myself accountable for that? And this is a great conversation to have with your coach, because again, I go back to partnership. When you have partnership, you've got shared accountability. And part of a coach's job is accountability, right? Like, I think part of why people hire us is not just guidance and support, but also accountability. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I do think, just as you were talking about that, it reminded me of something. when we were talking about red flags that we see. And I think that's one of the big things, is going back to when people say they have X amount of time to train, but then it's typically a certain type of workout that's constantly getting missed, or a certain day or a certain time. And so like, that's always when I'll typically reevaluate and be okay, like, what is it? Like, why is this not working? Where can we move it to, so that we can get it in consistently? But I do think there's something more to it sometimes when it's a certain type of workout that's constantly missed. And so then it needs to be a bit of a deeper dive, where it might not be a time constraint or something. It's something about not liking that particular workout, which if we're talking about the long run or the long ride, and you're doing these long events, it's like, that's pretty important, I think, from my perspective. And so,
if an athlete wants to do a certain ride on a Friday and they've expressed that, hey, this is the day I want to do it, but then they begin to ask you, hey, can we move it to Saturday? Can we move it to Saturday? You know, then it's okay. Like, a coach really, to some degree, doesn't care what day you do your long ride, as long as you can get it in and you're not trying to stack it up next to an intensive ride. Like, there is a rhyme and reason, as you know, as long as we can get in a routine. Like, that's what I would say. One big thing that could close this gap we're talking about is planning, for one, really planning your week. Like, and so what I mean by that is, athletes need to review the workouts for the upcoming week, that weekend before the week, you know, at least Saturday or Sunday. That way they can fully understand what the week looks like, and they can ask any questions of their coach for coached athletes. You know, I think that that's really important. And then just understanding that it's okay to move things if you need to, but the more that we can plan and be honest about when we can do what, the coach really can help you put the pieces together. I think that morning workouts are key. Like, people will say, I'm not a morning person, and I get that, but I just know from experience that getting a workout in after a hard day of work, when you've got kids' homework and you've got other things pulling at you, is near impossible. Now, people get it done. Like, I've seen people do workouts at 11 p.m. and it's just not a good way to, you know, to approach it. But anyway, you have to fight for it, right?
Well, and I'll add to that is, there's been studies that mental fatigue increases perceived effort.
Yeah.
And so, like you said, it's like, those workouts, yeah, you can probably get it done, but your RPE is going to be higher. Like, your quality is not going to be as good. And then if it's cutting into your sleep, then you're not recovering from it. And so it just becomes this downward spiral.
Well, I mean, not everybody, it's possible. Like, I don't know about you, Dave, but I've coached teachers, you know, who have to be at work at 7 a.m. You know, it's impossible to do that. And in that case, you know, you have to kind of pick the right races. Like, for example, if you're a teacher, you definitely, you know, want to be careful, at least in the South, about what race you pick, because you're going to be doing all your long runs in the afternoon in the heat of the summer. So you've got to kind of be careful around that. So,
and the other thing I was going to add to that is that one thing I tell my athletes, and the reason those morning workouts are so great, is shit's always going to pop up.
Yeah.
And so you either need to block off that time on your calendar, but if you work for somebody else, a lot of times you get these pop-up meetings that you weren't scheduled on your calendar or whatever, and you don't have an option to turn them down.
Yeah.
And so by doing that workout, protecting that time in the morning, getting it done first thing, it's a great way to start your day, get that checked off. And then it's one less thing to worry about. But I tell people with young kids, because this was my experience when I had two young kids, and I always had this light at the end of the tunnel that just kept moving further away from me. And I would think, oh, pretty soon they're both going to be in school and I'm going to have so much more time. Well, there was always a holiday. There was always a teacher work day. One of the kids was sick. One of the kids needed to be picked up. One of the kids needed to be dropped off. And so something just always popped up. And so we just need to anticipate that life is going to happen. Something's always going to pop up. And so the earlier we can get it in, or that time that we can block off, and get it, the quicker we can get it done, the more guaranteed it is to happen.
It definitely helps. And, you know, the other thing, I know one thought I had just a minute ago that kind of came in my head and then quickly left, was a great way I know you use Training Peaks. I use Training Peaks. That's the platform we use to coach. Most coaches, I would assume, use that. Although there are other platforms, but it's a great way to communicate with your coach. Put notes of any constraints that you have in your Training Peaks calendar for your coach to see, and we will work around them. Like, that's the best. I insist on it. Like, I cannot manage an athlete's crazy schedule without them putting some notes, not only about their constraints or limitations, but their preferences. So,
right,
you know, if you have a day off that's unexpected, or, you know, a holiday that I may not know about, you can get some longer work in. Let's do that. Like, let's maximize that day, because the days you are working, as you just pointed out, something's going to come up and we may not be able to do it. And in today's world, where a lot of people are working at home, and you've got these meetings that you were just talking about that pop up on your calendar, you know, I think there are most people who you work with probably aren't up at 6 or 7 a.m. You know, well, right, they probably are, but they're probably not on the trainer or out doing a long run. But the earlier you can get it out of the way, the less that disruption is likely to happen. And if you've had a great conversation with your employer about your big goals, maybe you can ask for some flexibility. I used to sort of go in a little late on long run days, and I would let my boss know, you know, especially early on, like 10, 12 years ago, you know, hey, I'm going to be able to come in a little late today. I'll work a little late. Ask for that flexibility, so you're not out there in the dark, or you're not on the trainer for a super long time early in the morning when it hurts worse. But I think what we're really talking about is planning. Just plan for the reality, yeah, of life. Like, don't fool yourself. Life can be hard. Just plan for it.
Yeah. And so I think that's a good place to wrap this up, is let's like kind of bring it all back together, yeah, and talk about what are not only the steps before you sign up for this goal event, what are the three things you should do? And then once you've signed up, what are the three things to ensure your success?
Yeah. Well, first of all, don't sign up for an event after two glasses of wine. Like, I kind of joke that I think most people sign up for an Ironman after a couple of glasses of wine and their credit cards in their hand. And, you know, next thing you know, they're on their way, because that big race, whether it's a mountain bike race or ultra, may be a year out now, but that year will close quickly. But all laughing aside about that, do your research, talk to people. Like, that's the biggest thing you can do before you sign up, in terms of understanding what you're getting yourself into. It's not the same for everyone, but if you're an age group athlete and you are hanging with other age group athletes, have a conversation, a focused conversation about what it may look like for you. So do that research. I'm a big fan of volunteering. Yes, it takes time. You may have to put that big event off because you know, they're a year apart. So for Ironman, like I tell people, like, go volunteer at an Ironman. Like, not only is it super cool and fun, but you'll learn so much about what that event is about. And
I'll add to that too, is that, yeah, a lot of times if you do that, you'll either, one, get a discount, or two, get a guaranteed spot for the following year. So it's a, yeah, great way to secure your spot if you decide it is something you want to do.
It's so much fun. And I know not everybody can do this, but almost every Ironman I have raced in, I have also volunteered. It might not be on race day. I might do it the day before, packet pickup or whatever. I think it's important to give back to the sport, but I have a lot of fun. And when I used to travel to these races with my family, my whole family volunteered. My wife actually volunteers on race day, so I would see her on the course.
Oh, nice.
Which is a lot of fun. But get involved in that way, and then you will know it. The other thing that we didn't talk about, Dave, that I would really, really advise people do is progress. Like, if you want to do Ironman or you want to do Leadville, you know, for God's sake, begin to race shorter distances, at least shorter distances before. Now, I know people who've gone straight to these big events and they do fine. I'm not saying like that's not a great goal to have, because it is. But again, don't miss out on the journey along the way by failing to kind of immerse yourself, you know, perhaps in 100K before you do a 100-miler, right, or a 30-miler before you do 100K. There's always the learning in that journey that really informs what happens along the way. You're missing out if you just try to jump to the big event. So I think those are some of the things that are required.
Well, and I just want to add on to that. It's interesting, and you just reminded me. I feel like that used to be a thing I saw more with triathletes, is they would, you just didn't have that much opportunity to race, because if you're signing up for one or two Ironmans a year, you're only racing once or twice a year. And so you really only get that practice once or twice a year. And now I'm seeing it more with the bigger events too, where people sign up for what I would call a bucket list event.
Yeah.
And that's really the only thing on their calendar, but you're robbing yourself of that experience if you aren't doing shorter races and just practicing nutrition and set gear setup and like pacing and all these other things that you really can't. You can do it in training, but it's going to be so much better to actually do it in a race.
Yeah.
And so I think for me, depending on how big the goal is, but oftentimes I think you and I had talked about, like, it might be a 3-year thing, depending on what the training age is of that athlete. You know, if it's somebody that's brand new to cycling or brand new to triathlon, like, it could take a couple of years before they're really ready to step into that big event.
And you'll have a lot more fun, and it'll be lower risk, because if you begin the process by doing a couple of Olympic distance, for example, or shorter distance mountain bike racing, there'll be a lot more fun, lower risk, because these big events we're talking about are high stress events. So not only do you enjoy the journey, the process, the discovery that comes with that, and you know, you can have more fun along the way and be less stressful than just jumping right into a huge event.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. And then the last thing that you didn't mention, but I think is really important, is consult a subject matter expert. So
yeah.
A coach or other people who have done the race, I think is really important. But yeah, I think my preference would be, if you're thinking about signing up for a big event and you're thinking about hiring a coach, talk to the coach first before you plop down the money on the big event.
Yeah, I think that's a great event. It usually doesn't happen that way, as you and I know. You know, I think people sign up for their event and then they begin to look for a coach. But for everybody who's listening to this podcast, please know that, and you and I are plugged into coaches all over the U.S. and even internationally, coaches are here to help. We want to help. Like, all we think about is how can we make our athletes successful? Like, that's what we are in this business to do. We are in it for other reasons. Like, we want to be able to ride in the middle of the day and, you know, do all the things that come with having the flexibility. But we work really hard to make our athletes successful, but it is a partnership. It definitely is a partnership. We can make it easier for you, but we're really a consultant. And so we'd be happy to have a conversation in advance of anyone signing up for what can amount for hundreds of dollars for some of these events, plus travel and lodging. That way you kind of know in advance what you're setting yourself up for. Please call us, like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So any other thoughts before we end this, that we didn't discuss over the course of the podcast, any resources or kind of takeaways for athletes?
Well, what I would say is probably what you would say. We work with some of the most amazing people. Like, if you think about it, these are people who manage families, in often very difficult, challenging careers and jobs, and they have these big dreams. And we want to help them get there. Like, I don't know. That's just so inspiring to me. It really is. When I think about my current roster, I learned so much from them that helps me. And I'm always really grateful for that. But, you know, on the other hand, I think what you and I've talked about today is that sometimes a part of our job is to bring reality to the situation. Yeah. And so for athletes, you know, use the experience that your coach has. Like, I have lived it. Like, I know how it feels, you know, to be at mile 20 of an Ironman. I know how it feels to have to swim, you know, and try to get to a meeting, or, you know, that you're worried the whole time you're on the trainer when you've got to return this phone call, or it's really can be quite chaotic, but it can be done and it can be a great journey. But do the work ahead of time to know what you're getting yourself into. Be curious about the process. Like, curiosity is the most powerful characteristic an athlete can have, and ask for help. Like, just ask for help. That could be with a coach, or it could be if you're a self-athlete, just reach out to a friend to kind of help you stay on track, because we have to stay on track. It's worth it. Like, it is so worth it to do the things you and I've talked about for the event that you've chosen as an athlete.
Yeah, and I think it makes the process a lot more rewarding also. Like you said, the race is, I always see it as a reward for the hard work you've put in.
100%.
So yeah, be like really embracing the process and enjoying it. Are just going to make your life in the sport, or your longevity in the sport, that much more rewarding. And so I think that's really important.
It should not be a burden. Like, if it feels like a burden, talk with somebody. Like, it should not feel like another burden in your life to get an hour workout in. Like, if it does, that's a good red flag.
Yeah, I was just going to say, that's one of my red flags for athletes is once it starts feeling like a chore, it's time to reevaluate what you're doing. So where can people find you if they're interested in coaching or a consult?
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that. So drivemultisport.com is the best way to find me. So that is my website. You can reach me through there. I would say social media, but the past couple of months, I have sort of, one of my goals is to reduce my screen time, and I've set metrics around that. So I don't check social media like I used to, though I probably should, but yeah. Drive Multisport is the name of my company. I'd be happy to talk with people.
Awesome. Something I love to do.
Yeah. It's been fantastic talking with you.
Yeah. You as well. I appreciate you taking the time, and always a lot of nuggets to take away here. And I think a lot of important things for people to consider for their next big event. Yep. So thank you.
All righty.
All right. Thanks, take care. Guys.